You're listening to Wine on the Vine with Lisa Mayaka, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Thursday. I'm Lisa Mayaka, your host for Wine on the Vine. What I call an hour of shameless storytelling. I believe that everyone's story is valid. And this is a forum and a format that, thank goodness for LA Talk Radio, allows us to have these very meaningful conversations, one to the other, and allow these stories to bubble up and come forth and be points of discussion. Today's show is sponsored by Wine on the Vine. You can find the show live, of course. If you're listening now, you already know that. But if you hear about it from a friend, what have you, want to find a show from the past and look at it or listen to it again, you can go to latalkradio.com. You can find my page as a host. Both LA Talk Radio and Wine on the Vine have Facebook pages where the show airs for a week after we go live. All kinds of ways to connect with us. I have a website, wine, W-H-I-N-E, on thevine.com. There's a place to contact me if you desire to tell your story or have any comments about a story that has been told. So welcome. I am thrilled for today's conversation. It has been begging my attention for quite some time. We had some scheduling issues, and so today's guest got delayed and delayed, and I'm so thankful. And, you know, the universe provides in so many ways. This week has been a conversation for me in other realms about today's theme. And our theme today is simply, who am I? And today's story is one of evolving identity. As a social worker and a clinician and a human, I have been fascinated by the topic of identity forever. And it's interesting to me as life continues its pace, and particularly over the course of this last year, where so many of us have shifted roles, taken on different roles, different positions, different responsibilities, had to stay home and figure things out. This whole like sense of self, this whole identity piece has kind of come to the forefront. I believe that there are five core longings all humans have as individuals, and the primary one is this identity, to understand who am I. So we are going to take a little bit of a deep dive, I think, today and explore that question with a very special guest. A few months back, actually the end of 2020, I had the honor of sitting on a panel with Cal State San Bernardino and with my guest today. We actually represented kind of polar opposite populations that have had decades, if not centuries, of conflict one with the other. And we engaged in a panel conversation followed by Q&A from a large crowd that was all Zoom about these conflicts and about these cultural clashes and about understanding where this people group is coming from. And it was one of the great honors of my professional life. It has informed me personally and professionally from that day to this. I think it will for many, many eons to come. And so anyways, I also was honored to meet her as a human being and discovered kind of during and after the fact of those conversations that she and I have a lot in common. So today we're going to talk about those. I want to welcome to Wine on the Vine my guest, Sunny Dominguez. Hi.
Hello.
So by formal introduction, before we get into your story, Sunny hails from the Ipai Nation of Santa Isabel, a tribal nation located in San Diego County. She sits in the elected position of tribal secretary for her tribe. She's worked in Indian child welfare as a trainer and has 20 years of experience working with the tribal community in a lot of areas: family advocacy, early childhood education, tribal youth coordinator, and cultural site monitor. Most importantly, and I love this, Sunny, I love this. I love when this is at the end of the bio because this lands the plane, right? You have been honored and blessed to do the work of mother, grandmother, foster parent, and Indian custodian. And she summarizes her bio this way. She believes her purpose is that of spiritual growth and dedication to the healing and protecting of our past, present, and future generations. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here. So,
well, I'm honored. You and I have, from the time we met, had a few intersecting conversations, as I knew right away that I wanted you on this show. I wanted to discuss this theme, but we had some dialogue back and forth about what the theme should be. Right. And so let me just ask you, kind of out of the gate, who are you?
Inya Asha. Sunnybird. In my language, it's Inya Asha. And my name is Sunny Dominguez. And like I said, I'm from the Yupai Nation of Santa Isabel. And that's an interesting question, because I'm in the process of figuring out who I am. I know who I am to others. I've been mother, grandmother, all of these things, daughter, aunt, godmother, all of these things. And that's right now, at the point of my life that I'm in, is I'm in the process of figuring out exactly who I am. I identify with the name that was given to me by my parents, Sunny Angela. I still have my married name. I've been widowed for 13 years coming up. But outside of all of that, I would just like to say that I'm human, I'm woman, I'm here, and I don't know, and that's the quest that I'm on right now, is to try to see exactly who I am outside of those titles and labels. And like the work that I do, it is heartfelt, it's from the heart. I truly believe that I was put in this position for a higher purpose than myself. And so I'm living up to those things. And I think at the end of the day, at the beginning of the day and all throughout, I truly believe I am a child of God. So with that being, if I can keep that at the forefront of my identity, first and foremost, then I think everything else will fall into place, but I'm still struggling. Like, what does that look like? What does that look like where I am today in my life? My profession, my family life, just my existence and being. So
that is such a powerful question you just stated. What does this look like? So Inya Asha, mm-hmm. What does that mean?
Inya is the Kumeyaay word for the sun, and it also means I am. And Asha is bird. So my nickname, I don't know if I told you this before, but my nickname is Bird, and it was given to me when I was young. And my name is Sunny Angela, but I was also called Bird my whole life through for my family.
Like, so, the name that they called you when they wanted you to come to the dinner table was Bird?
Bird! Some of my, you know, funniest memories of my mom was when she would scream my name across the house, Bird! So yeah,
who gave you that name? Where does Inya Asha come from?
I was taking a Kumeyaay class to get reacquainted with, you know, the name of the language of our indigenous people. One of the assignments was to have somebody name us, somebody else in the group, and it just so happened that our tribal chairperson at the time, she named me, and she pretty much, I believe, she gave me the name that I had always been known as anyway, but in English. She translated it into Kumeyaay, which is Inya Asha. So Inya has a double meaning the sun, or I am, and then Asha is the word bird. So I would say outside of the Sunny Angela and all of that, inside internally, who I am is Inyasha, and who is she? And that, I would say, is going to be an interesting voyage to find out.
Ooh, an interesting voyage. So not just a journey. You're like on this, you might be in some rough waters as you...
When am I not in rough water?
Well, tell me more. Tell me more. So, okay. So the audience doesn't know you from anybody. I barely know you. I'm just honored to be connected. I feel you. We both have a Native American biology, yours much more than mine. But we also are female as part of our identity. And we have subscribed because of what we did. We reproduced and had children. So we're mothers. We both actually are grandmothers. Is that right?
Yes.
And we have spent a significant portion of our life giving energy toward caring for others in a whole bunch of ways. But what I hear you saying is beneath all that, before all those roles came along for you to do, there was, you were being called a bird.
I was called a bird. Well, funny story, it got narrowed down to bird, but I believe initially it was Dirty Bird. So there were years.
What does that mean? What does that mean? A dirty bird?
Well, according to my mom, my father, who I never met, had given me that name as an infant because I would always spit up over him. That was like the only story I had of my
father. Are you serious?
Right. So that's like the only story I had. And, you know, when we're playing sports and mom's on the sidelines cheering, go Dirty Bird. And my teammates are like, who's Dirty Bird? And I'm like,
so, yeah. So I'll ask, and please feel free not to answer it. How old were you when you asked your mom about that? Like, why are you calling me that?
I think it was probably 9 or 10-ish, maybe, if I'm guessing right. I was young, thinking like, well, like, where did that come from? Why is it Dirty Bird? I couldn't even tell you exactly when the dirty part got dropped and it just became Bird, but here I am. So
Oh my goodness. So many directions. I feel like this conversation can take.
Oh yeah.
You and I both recognize that identity encompasses memories, experiences, relationships, and values that have impacted our sense of self.
Right.
And so at any given moment, we may identify across some spectrum of experience. But I know this to be true, that you and I both in our maturing life have wrestled and wrangled and wondered about who am I when some of those roles fall off.
Yeah, it's terrifying. It's just terrifying to think.
Because I would say scary as shit. Terrifying, yeah. Is a much cleaner way to say it.
Yeah, that works too. Because I mean, I feel like I'm in the process of that right now. Just a little history. You know, mother of five, and throughout mothering the five children, I took on nephews, nieces, foster children, all of these different things. And even before that, when, you know, just my family dynamics was to help, to, you know, be a part of taking care of the kids, taking care of all of these chores, all of these things, there was so much responsibility in my part in the family. So fast forwarding, you know, becoming a young mother, I'm having children, taking care of these children, and, you know, helping with nieces, nephews, community. And now I'm to the point where I have four adults, and I have one child left in the home that, well, we're on the reservation and the others are like nearby. So they're out of the home, but they're right there.
You can throw a stone and hit them.
Exactly. I mean, I can look out. But my 16-year-old, he's left. So that whole empty nesting thing is real. And I feel like it came in phases as each one was adulting out. And I think with the first one, it was scary thinking like, oh my God, did I even prepare this kid right? Like, you think about all of those things. And now I'm on my last one. And I just know in between the first and the last, it's like, well, with them, you did this. And how come with me, you did that? It's because I'm the mother and I have a right to change my mind. And you see how it's working out for them, right? So just bear with me on this one. You know, so now that like my life has been like making sure that they were taken care of, making sure that they had what they needed when they needed it. And so it was constantly go, 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 go. So even before their father had passed, you know, I was the one working most of the time. He was at home for whatever the reasons were in that instance. And so I was always, you know, trying to make sure that they had their needs met. And then as the years went by, making it to their events, making it to, you know, making sure they had what they needed, making sure that I had a job and I was maintaining it. So all of my focus had been there. And I remember this one time in particular, one of my oldest boys was like, "Mom, what do you like to do for yourself?"
I was like, what does that even mean?
Yeah,
for myself.
What? Mm-hmm. That's how it was, exactly. So I was just like,
did it take you to answer that question?
It took me a minute, but then I answered right away, but he wasn't satisfied with the answer.
Oh. So
I go, oh, well, let me think about that. Oh, I like watching you guys play sports. I like when you guys are doing this or doing that. What do you like to do that doesn't involve us?
For you, for only you. And how long did that question take?
I haven't answered it yet.
Thank you. That is so honest. That is so real.
I mean, I really haven't. And so where I was going with that story is like, now that I have one child left and, you know, the struggles of that and, you know, the emotions of empty nesting, the added stuff that comes with you with having adult children, there's so much to it. But I think as I was emptying the nest, there was that fear, like, I don't know if it's about needing to be needed or just constantly having those obligations and responsibilities, that I feel like I filled my time with more to make up for what I didn't have to do anymore for the now adults.
So this is the conversation you and I have had mm-hmm. between the time that we served on the panel to this, when we right. kind of really broke things down as far as, hi, I'm Lisa. Hi, I'm Sunny. Right. And we put the professional hats aside and got to know each other a little bit
right.
and realized we both had 5 children. Mm-hmm. We both are in that suffering space of, I don't want to figure out who I am without these kids because it's all I've ever known. It's all I've ever done. Letting go sucks. And I love them, so I have to let them go. But what does this look like then for me? Because we both became moms when we were really young before right. we really had our own identities shaped.
Right.
And that, I mean, that's the crux of the conversation.
Yeah, right? That in itself.
I think there's probably a lot of moms out there that didn't become moms until well after they had established their, you know,
yeah.
careers and what have you, that are like, what are you talking about? But this is a real story for thousands and hundreds of thousands of women.
Right.
Who, for whatever reason, identity was shaped very early on by a role of motherhood.
Right.
So pre-education, pre-exploration, we became moms and very much attached to a responsibility that has carried us this far. So
It's a lifelong thing in one aspect. It's lifelong. So, but at the same time, it's like, I think where I'm struggling with is how to find that time for me and develop me and grow me and, you know, give to my offspring, my children, like what they need, or I brought them into this world, right?
They did not ask to be here. And they did not ask for their parents, as wonky as that world was for them. I don't know if this is even a fair question, so get back if it's not, but what would you say to your teenage self now?
The heck?
Pre-children.
We'll probably slap her around first.
Okay. No, and say, what are you thinking?
Stop. No, actually, the reason I did a lot of the things I did was to get out of other situations. And
oh, that is so honest.
It was
more
like, I don't have any regrets in that regard, because I had the tools that I had. That's all I had. So I was operating with that.
Sunny, you just landed on, like, I feel like this is the greatest compassion we can offer ourselves and others who live in a ball of shame for some mistake they made earlier on. We did the best damn job we could with the tools we had and the knowledge we had and the wherewithal we had at the time.
Right. So I think to answer the question of what would I say to myself is, hang in there. Don't give up. Keep pushing. Because, and I think in that regard, I think, you know, for education, maybe for just certain areas where I felt like, because of society and judgment from community and just from the world of being a young mother, it just wasn't expected for me to accomplish or go anywhere. And so that was already in my mind, that there's only so much I can do anyway, because I have all of this. So, you know, the other thing too is getting, you know, around like the little gossips and stuff about what was happening. I was a young mother and people would come up to my mom. And, you know, I was with their dad. He passed he passed about 13 years or so ago, but I was with him for a while. And people behind the scenes, like at a community events, would see our little family. And they would go up to my mom and be like, which ones are his? Just because it's unreal to imagine that one woman has five kids by the same age.
I've experienced that.
Yeah. So it's like, you gave birth at a young age.
Were you ever asked if you were Catholic?
No. But, actually, I think jokingly, or people would say, did you have a TV? Or
yeah.
There was always the assumption that I never graduated high school. They're like, so are you going to go back to school? And I'd be like, oh, yeah, you know, but I got this and that and da, da, da. But I was thinking college, and they were thinking to finish high school. And I was like, well, I finished high school.
Oh, my goodness. You know, now we have a word for that. Those are microaggressions, right? Like, those are not okay. But back, yeah. Oh, my God. So.
And then the idea of, what, you're having another one when I was pregnant again? What is it to you? You're not taking care of them. You know, I mean, there's so much to it. You know, there's so much that people, they pass their judgment. They look at you a certain way. They treat you a certain way just because of their own assumptions or social norms or standards or whatever that crap is out there. I couldn't even tell you.
So you're still on the voyage.
Yep.
Of self-identity. Asking yourself this question, because you are asked, you have this amazing awareness. I love this. I think it's interesting that you and I, because we've been taking care of people for so long, we are very connected to humans and human behavior, and we sense the other But we struggle very much to really sense ourselves and what our feelings are, what we want, what we crave, and more so what we need.
And that's where I'm at right now, is coming to the realization of how much more work I have that needs to be done in my own healing. I mean, I haven't said much of my story, and maybe in another time we can go deeper into that, but there was a lot.
This is your story. You get to tell what you want today.
Well, there was a lot that I grew up with, being from a Indian tribe, Native American, Indian, however people want to identify, the indigenous folks from this country, we're still here. We're still alive, contrary to popular belief. We did not die. We did not all get murdered. You know, whatever the history, the false history that's out there, our people are still here. But with that is that, for one, just the stuff that I had no control over that's in my DNA, just based off of the intergenerational trauma that was passed down from my ancestors through my mother to me. So that's just one aspect. And if you knew the story full on, you know, about the afflictions that happened, you know, then it's understandable, like even how my mom raised me and the challenges that I had growing up with her. It all stemmed from that intergenerational trauma and what she experienced. And just like I mentioned before, the tools that she had available to her, that was the best she could do at that time, you know. And I think when I became when I became widowed and had to take on my family by myself, that's what I was able to so much more appreciate, the struggles of my mom being a single woman of seven of us on the reservation, and the hardships of, you know, what kind of leads me into, you know, I work for Indian Child Welfare right now. My mom would tell us, you know, she had to go to work and to take care of us. And if she had to go too far away from us, there, you know, we didn't have cell phones. We didn't have all this technology to communicate. She would let us know, I'm going to be gone for this amount of time. If you have an emergency, here's what you do. Do not go outside. And then some days, if we were lucky, we got to go outside and play, but we have to do it in the backyard. When it got night, keep the lights off. She wasn't neglectful. She had to take care of business. And then when she'd get back home, we were there safe, and we had family nearby. But she understood.
What was that about? Why do you have to go in the backyard? Why couldn't you play in the front yard?
That takes me to where we are today with the Indian Child Welfare Act. There were social workers back in those days, and, you know, even well, you know, before that were being taken away. Like, you know, this the history of Don Land, that panel that we were sitting on.
Yes.
Right. I mean, that was true and real. And even in her time, it was known that the county workers could just come in and swoop us all up, and she would get home and potentially we wouldn't be there. So we had to take extra precautions, you know, and even having, you know, being of mixed identity, we had a lot of, you know, even racism when we got here. Just to summarize it, you know, for part of the story is, you know, that ACEs test that goes out there, you know,
there's, let's talk about that, adverse childhood experiences, ACE. Mm-hmm. And there's TED Talks on it, and everybody ought to look that up, because what we know now from data and research and stories like yours and like mine, that the more of those 20 adverse childhood experiences that you have had in your life, they determine what or what you don't have to operate with the rest of your life.
However, like, I want to look more into that, because I know the very basics of what you just described. And, you know, one of my friends who's a social worker, going to school for psychology, all that good stuff, we did that one time, just, you know, answer these questions. And she's like, well, based off of this, how is it that you're even still alive? People commit suicide with less than that. I mean, again, I think it goes back to, by the grace of God, I'm still here standing today. And, you know, there's tools I may, or whatever you just said, I may never be equipped with. I don't fully believe that. Without knowing more about it, I can't really speak to it.
Yeah, I think the fundamental piece of that ACEs is to understand that these were traumas, and mm-hmm. we can look at a human being through the lens of what happened to them mm-hmm. instead of what's wrong with you with them. Mm-hmm. These inform what might be going on in front of us that we're watching unfold.
Right.
It doesn't mean that a people group or an individual right. does not have enormous amounts of resilience that come right. from some other space, faith in God, a strong mom, a nurturing community. But
spiritual background, a belief.
Right. But I think it's so informative to this conversation, because when we're looking at identity, like as you and I are in almost midlife, we're reframing some mm-hmm. of our story because right. we realize these facts. We both became mothers long before we probably intended to. Doesn't change the love or care or whatever we have for the children, but it definitely stopped our own personal development
right.
in a capacity that would have to wait until later on
right.
or not happen. And then you've had other traumas, you were widowed and so on and so forth. So who are you today, Sunny?
Before I get there, I would like to say that like, with the whole resilience aspect, just as I said that, you know, that the trauma is passed on from generation to generation, the resilience also comes through that passing on, you know. And so if we start to focus on the positive and what's going right and we lean on that, there's a woman I work with, I was in a meeting with her just recently, and she said, instead of saying what's wrong with you, why aren't we saying what's strong with you and start focusing on the positive?
Ooh, I like and, that.
So I think
I love that because that yeah. invokes a different story.
Yeah. So I'm gonna give credit.
Ooh, I love that. I'm writing that down. What's strong with you? Okay.
Karen Kolb from the Indian Health Council down here in San Diego County. That's the first place I heard it. What's strong with you? And it's like, and it's true. It's like, but at the same time, in my place of work, we also were changing the narrative, trauma-informed, but like, why aren't we resilience-informed? Why aren't we looking at like changing the narrative and changing that? And I think who am I? I think I am, like I said before, I am a child of God. I am a strong individual. I have overcome, and maybe where I'm at in life may or may not be deemed as successful to others, but knowing my story, me personally, what I've been through, what I've overcome, I am successful. I am strong. I am capable. Where I go tomorrow, that's not certain yet, because that's what I'm still trying to see, because by the grace of God, I've made it this far. And I know that everything comes for a reason, you know, everything gets set up for like, you know, where I'm at today, I could look back and say, there were all these pieces that divine intervention set up, put in place for me to be where I am. And so the hard part right now is just recently, just, I don't know, midlife crisis, just the whole idea of I've only got, my son turned 16 in March, 2 more years. What am I really going to do with myself when I don't have that? I am Sunny. I am me. I am a woman. I have needs. I have desires. I have wants, goals. My goals right now, I you know, I work for my people. My goals are to better the community, to better the government, to better the structure of what we have going on in my indigenous community here on the reservation. I've been at it for a long time and we're starting to see a lot more progress. So my heart is there. My heart is to help. My heart is to give. And at the same time, I'm learning more, and it's been very painful, this learning process mm-hmm. to understand that for me. I mean, you hear it all the time, but in order to give to others, we should give to ourselves first.
Oh, and yeah. I mean, it sounds cliche.
Right.
So what does that look like for you, Sunny, in real time? What do you do to give to yourself in order for you to continue to give to others in your life?
That's the hard part, because I've been continuously going and going. going and going and going. And I'm realizing now that, like, you know, I shared with you recently, I had knee surgery. So I've always heard, you know, through different sermons and things I've listened to, if you don't slow yourself down, you're going to get slowed down one way or another. So you might as well slow yourself down.
The universe converges.
Wow, I am always busy with these things. Another time, my son, he's taken on like this, he's gotten to this dance group, and I was asked if I was going to go up, or no, he invited me to go somewhere with him. One of his friends, oh, have your mom come along. Oh, she doesn't do anything. She doesn't like going out. She just works. And that's his reality of me. I just work. And
how did that feel for you?
I was like, why? I really had to look at myself. Like, is that's all I'm known as, is the woman who's on a video meeting or working or doing something?
Yeah, I'll never forget. As long as I live, my fourth child, I have five as well, so we have that in common. My fourth child, a daughter, she could not have been older than 10. And I was trying to figure me out. I knew I needed to have my hand in something other than, you know, baking, right, cooking and home. And so, and I fell in love with work. I love working. Mm-hmm. I had all of these unfulfilled desires because I became a mom so soon and gave myself there. But I started like tiptoeing into a professional world, right?
Right.
And she looked at me one day and she says, "Mom, I think," she goes, "you love work more than you love me."
Yeah.
But it wasn't untrue from her perspective.
Right. And, right? That, and that's a hard reality, because in our mind, like for me, it's like, no, I have to do this to take care of you. I have to do this.
A 10-year-old doesn't understand that. A 10-year-old needs mom to be mindful and present and available, when a 10-year-old needs mom to be mindful and present and available. So, but now we're like on the other end of the spectrum where they're about to be completely launched. And now we're like, oh, I don't know who I am without them.
Right. So what I had said in my thing, you know, my purpose is that of spiritual growth and dedication to healing and protecting our past, present, and future generations. So to me, that I think I would have to say I am my purpose. I would have to say that for me to do that, I have to grow spiritually. And when while there is spiritual growth, there's always room for improvement. There's always room for growing. There's always room for learning. And with that newly obtained knowledge and understanding, then I can be better prepared to provide that healing for others as well. Like I said, past, present, and future.
So you identify as a spiritual creature, which informs your purpose as one who is here to put out spiritual growth. Is that what I heard you say?
Can you repeat that?
You identify as a spiritual creature, which informs your purpose.
Yeah, I would say. I mean, like I said before, I'm the child of God, right? So for me, that means that I do have a responsibility and an obligation, and there's still that struggle of, you know, when they say put yourself first to take care of others, then there's that whole, well, how much? I mean, it's, you don't want to be selfish. Where's that line? Where's that balance? So I would like to say, yes, I dedicate myself on a regular basis to try to grow more spiritually with the wisdom and the spiritual guidance needed so that I can endure and overcome and constantly self-analyze and self-correct the things that I feel need to be changed to be a better me, to set a better example. And the hard part about all of this is, you know, being a young mother, being with the tools that I was given, my circumstances in life, I made a lot of mistakes raising my kids. Not holding on to the guilt and the pain through all of that.
It's what we do.
Right. So I think part of correcting that is to be the example, because my kids watched me through a lot. They watched when I lost their father. They watched all these different circumstances that was crumbling down on me. And here I am still standing. And here I am by my definition and successful and continuing to grow in that. as I grow in myself and to see who I am. You know, I feel like I was raising them and myself, and now I got to continue raising myself for the rest of my days.
That's I want you to say that again.
I mean,
raising yourself, like this whole notion of reparenting ourselves or healing our inner child, or there's so many different ways that therapeutically it gets looked at. But I don't think there's a single one of us that doesn't encounter some version of our childhood wounds when we're older, no matter what happened to us.
Right.
But so how do you delineate between a role and an identity?
That's a great question. I know a role and an identity. Well, I know, like, I identify as a woman, child of the Most High, a human being placed on this planet for a purpose. And from my understanding of it, my purpose is for those things.
So role and purpose, or role and identity, purpose and identity, it sounds like are pretty blended for you.
More so than, because I think who I am naturally places me in these roles. If I'm following correctly my intuition and spiritual guidance, right? That naturally puts me into those roles, but that doesn't take away of who I am singularly to be able to accomplish those things. And I think what's important about all of this is that I've allowed myself to get drowned out through all of those roles. Mm-hmm. And I haven't really looked in the mirror to say, what is it that you want, Sunny? What is it that you need? You know what everyone else wants and needs, codependence, whatever it is you want to call it. But it's like, what is it that you want? What is it that you need? And
the end of the day, when you take all the hats off and you put them all in the racks, because you and I probably have 20 racks. Lots of really fun hats. We could go to Britain and be very fashionable. And we're left without the hat on the head. And we look in the mirror and say, truly, who am I?
Right.
I think who we are has driven who we have been our whole life.
Right.
But it's that intentional, purposeful. I mean, you and I are both on the same voyage. I love that word. We're both kind of set sail. We don't know where we're going to end up.
We don't know how we're getting there. We're just going.
No, I think we're on a sailboat. It depends where the wind blows and who.
And I think that's the beauty of it, right? That's part of it.
Oh, you and I have very different ideas of beauty, but yes.
I mean, okay, so I'd like to try, like, it's not easy. It doesn't always happen, but trying to stay positive through whatever circumstance. You know, there's a quote in scripture, Romans 8:28, all things work together for those who love God and those who are called according to his purpose. So that's something that grounds me and keeps me right. Because when I think about all of the hard stuff that is thrown my way in this lifetime, that's the positivity. That's a fact. That's a promise that I know I could hold on to. That's going to get me through it. And so when I say that to myself through the hard time, it's like, okay, that means that if it all works good, all works together for good for those that love God and are called according to his purpose. That means even this absolutely terrible, horrible, no good, very bad situation is going to work out for the purpose. And sometimes I will try to find what that lesson is or find where I can grow through that. And it's not always obvious at the top to say, hey, this is what you need to learn through this. Sometimes it's immediate and sometimes it takes a little bit of time. Sometimes it's a year or two later. Aha.
That's 10 or 20 or 30. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite quotes that has held me to some form of what you just said is Nelson Mandela, after 27 years of wrongful imprisonment, said, I never lose. Mm-hmm. I either win or I learn.
Right.
And that's so what you just said is exactly that all things plan, that no matter what comes my way, what shit hits the fan, what trauma I've been dealt, the apologies I have to make to my children and others who I've let down. I have to trust in some cosmic justice, some greater good that will ultimately find its way forward. And that's how I get up every morning. Is that?
Yeah, that's absolutely it. And everything balances out, you know, everything is there's justice, and it doesn't seem like it, but there's so much at work that we have no clue about, you know, the higher powers that be that's behind the scenes. And just because you can't make sense of these things logically doesn't mean that there's not more at work. So,
okay. So now we're, yes, but now we're sounding so idealistic. Please tell me that that shit bothers you to no end. That you want to know the answer now.
Of course, but you know, some things we're just not going to get the answer to. So, and I'm not saying I walk with my head up and la la la, there's flowers and butterflies floating around my head all the time. Like there's not, it's not always peaches and cream. There's a lot of crying, a lot of tears, a lot of pain, a lot of anger. I'm human. And even through all of that, there's lessons to be learned. There's wisdom to be gained. There's pieces of myself that needs to be mended. And, you know, there's still pieces of myself that I have to give. And I think, you know, it's like my godfather puts it, you know, we give of ourselves, but we have to go back to be refilled. We can't just give. So to go back to the fountain, and to the fountain is that relationship with the higher power, to get refilled so that we could have
abundance. Yeah. So, and okay. So to get back to our theme, as we kind of wrap this show up, what I really felt from you right there is that connection to a higher power is a big part of your identity.
Absolutely.
And that holds you to some form of connectedness
with
nothing else makes sense. Okay. So when we say, who am I? It seems like you have allowed for this evolution through all these different roles. And you're not looking for like a particular biography or set point to who you're open to whatever.
I think after all is said and done, I will see who I am through it all. Because I think it's ever changing. Like when it's, you know, the title of evolving. I think if we stop evolving, then there's a problem. You know, we should always continuously evolve. Is our time here on Earth finished? If we're no longer evolving in a spiritual aspect, in our being within ourselves, like what else is there if not evolution? And I think, you know.
And don't you think that looks different on every human being?
Everybody has their own mindset or belief or how.
And
that
we works. All come from different religions and frameworks, and we're all exposed to different experiences.
That's why it's not up to us to judge everybody.
Say it again. I need to hear it.
It's not up to us to judge anybody. It's everybody is responsible for their own individual relationship with self and the creator of all. Many people don't even believe that there's a creator, you know, I mean, but again, that's their prerogative and that's their responsibility to hash that out between, you know.
And it is a hashing. You and I are in the middle of hashing.
Exactly. Everybody.
There ain't no hashtags to hashing. It is a individual, very often private.
Exactly.
Solitude experience that isn't pretty. Right. It's so necessary.
Right.
And I'm so honored for your vulnerability and willingness to come on today and share these parts of yourself that we don't get to hear in the other public forums where you present.
Right.
We're always talking about tribal affairs and ICWA and some of these other social service pieces. Right. But may I just say, I honor you so deeply. Mm-hmm. And I'm so grateful you allowed me space in a context that was conflictual, and we found our way to each other. And that is the purpose of this show for all our listeners, as we bid you adieu for another week, this show is about connecting at the heart, about sharing our stories so that we can better understand where each other might be coming from. And I think in that understanding, we can embrace a shared humanity. So, well, Sunny, thank you. You're welcome. And we'll send it back to the studio now. We'll see you next week, everyone. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Wine on the Vine with Lisa Mayaka, only on LA Talk Radio.